The road is two tails. Could be messy, especially if security is positively vetting you at the time. I am plugged into the boob tube with a can of beer in one hand and a pizza box in my lap, watching things go fast and explode on the Discovery Channel, when there's a horrible groaning sound from beneath the carpet. At first I pay no attention because the program currently showing is a particularly messy plane crash docudrama, but when the sound continues for a few seconds, I realize that not even Pinky's apocalyptic stereo could generate that kind of volume, and maybe if I don't do something about it, I'm going to vanish through the floorboards. So I stand up unsteadily and weave my way into the kitchen. The cellar door is ajar, and the light's on, and the noise is coming from down below. I grab the fire extinguisher and advance. There's an ominous smell of ozone. Chateau Cthulhu is a mid-Victorian terrace, an anonymous London dormitory unit distinguished mainly by having three cellar rooms and a laundry residential clearance, meaning that it's probably not bugged by the KGB, CIA, or our enemies in MI6. There is a grand total of four double bedrooms, each with a lock on the door, plus a shared kitchen, living room, dining room, and bathroom. The plumbing gurgles ominously late at night. The carpet is a peculiarly lurid species of paisley print that was the height of fashion in 1880, and then experienced an undeserved resurrection among cheap-ass landlords during the 1980s. When we moved in, one of the cellars was full of lumber. One of them contained two rusting bicycle frames and some mummified cat turds, and the third had some burned-out candle stubs and a blue chalk pentacle inscribed on the floor. The omens were good. The house was right at the corner of an equilateral triangle of streets, aligned due east-west, and there were no TV aerials blocking the southern roofline. Brains, pretending to be a god-botherer, managed to negotiate a 10% discount in return for exorcising the place after convincing Mr. Hussein that a history of pagan activities could severely impact his revenues on the rental market. Nonsense, but profitable nonsense. The former temple is now Pinky's space, and if Mr. Hussein could see it, he'd probably have a heart attack. It isn't the dubious wiring, or the 3 6-foot-high racks containing Pinky's 1950s vintage Stroger telephone exchange that make it so alarming. More like the way Pinky replaced the amateurish chalk sketch with a homemade optical bench and properly calibrated beam splitter rig and 5 prisms, upgrading the original student seance antics to full-blown functionality. Yes, it's a pentacle. Yes, he's using a 50 kilovolt HT power supply and some mucking great capacitors to drive the laser. Yes, that's a flayed goatskin on the coat rack, and a half-eaten pizza whirling round at 33 RPM on the Lynn Sondek turntable. This is what you get to live with when you share a house with Pinky and the Brain. I said it was a geek house, and we all work in the laundry, so we're talking about geek houses for very esoteric, indeed occult, values of geek. The smell of ozone, and the ominous crackling sound, is emanating from the HT power supply. The groaning, squealing noise is coming from the speakers, black monoliths from the 2001 school of hi-fi engineering. I tiptoe round the far wall from the PSU and pick up the microphone lying in front of the left speaker, then yank on the cord. There's a stunning blast of noise, then the feedback cut out. Where the hell is Brains? I look at the PSU. There's a blue-white flickering inside it that gives me a nasty sinking feeling. If this was any other house, I'd just go for the distribution board and pull the main circuit breaker, but there are some capacitors next to that thing that are the size of a compact washing machine, and I don't fancy trying to safe them in a dark cellar. I heft the extinguisher, a rather illegal halon canister, necessary in this household, and advance. The main cutoff switch is a huge knife switch on the rack above the PSU. There's a wooden chair sitting next to it. I pick it up and, gripping the back, use one leg to nudge the handle. There's a loud clunk and a simultaneous bang from the PSU. Oops, I guess I let the magic smoke out. Dumping the chair, I yank the pin from the extinguisher and open fire, remembering to stand well clear of those big capacitors. You can leave them with their terminals exposed and they'll pick up a static charge out of thin air. After half an hour, if you stick a screwdriver blade across them, you'd better hope the handle is well insulated, because you're sure as hell going to need a new screwdriver. and if the insulation is defective, you'll need a couple of new fingers as well. The smoke forms a thin coil in mid-air, swirling in an unnaturally regular donut below the single swinging light bulb. A faint laughter echoes from the speakers. "What have you done with him?" I yell, forgetting that the mic isn't plugged in. The pentacle on the optical bench is powered down and empty, but the jar beside it is labeled, "Dust from ye tomb of ye mummy, prop Winchester Road Crematorium." And you don't need to be a necromancer to figure out what that means.
"Done with whom?"
I nearly jump right out of my skin as I turn round. Pinky is standing in the doorway, holding his jeans up with one hand and looking annoyed.
"I was having a shit,"
he says.
"Who's the fuss about?"
I point at the power supply wordlessly.
"You didn't."
He stops, raises his hands and tugs at his thin hair.
"My capacitors, you bastard!"
"Next time you try to burn the house down, and or summon up a nameless monstrosity from the abyss without adequate shielding, why don't you give me some warning so I can find another continent to go live on?"
"Those were 50 quid each in Camden Market."
He's leaning over the PSU anxiously, but not quite anxiously enough to poke at it without insulated gloves. "Doesn't matter. First thing I heard was the feedback howl. If you don't shut the thing down before answering a call of nature, don't be surprised when Mrs. Nature comes calling on you."
"Bugger,"
he shakes his head.
"Can I borrow your laser pointer?"
I head back upstairs to carry on watching my plane crash program. It's at times like this that I think I really need to find a better class of flatmate. If only the pool of security-cleared cohabitants was larger. Chapter 2. Inquiry. It's the afternoon of day 2 of the training course Andy sent me on, and I've just about hit my boredom threshold. Down on the floor of the cramped lecture theater, our teacher is holding forth about the practicalities of summoning and constraining powers from the vasty deeps. You can only absorb so much of this in one sitting, and my mind is a million kilometers away.
"You need to remember that all great circles must be terminated.